It's time to get informed and inspired. This is Saturday Morning Live, sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC at Linden Sheet Metal on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety. Opinions and information expressed are those of the host and or sponsors and do not necessarily reflect those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome to Saturday Morning Live. I'm your host this morning, Ashley Buttonshone. And joining me on the phones today is Brandi Cruz. Brandi is the host of Undivided, a podcast, and she does video as well. But you might recognize Brandi also from Q13. She was the Spitfire on for a number of years, kind of saying it how it is on there. Now on her show, Undivided. So welcome this morning, Brandi. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. You know, I'm excited to come up there later today.
Yeah, so Brandi's going to be up here in Ferndale today. She's going to be speaking at a local event. We're super excited to have you. So, Brandi, this morning we're going to talk about some issues. I know you've talked about them a lot on your show, but I don't know how many of my listeners are also your listeners, so maybe we can get some crossover today. We're going to take our first break, and we're going to be right back.
This is Dick Donahue, and as host of Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI, I'm constantly looking for information for the shows that can assist you in evaluating long-term solutions for your financial future. It is sometimes difficult to see through the forest and maintain a vision for our future, one that is not only impacted by current events, but will meet our long-term needs as well, a balance that is sometimes hard to achieve. Join us at 11 a.m. each Saturday or 9 a.m. on Sunday for our Wealth Wake Up shows as we try and provide you some clarity, or call us at Asset Advisors 360-733-1200 or check out our website at wealthwakeup.com.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up or in our podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.
Hello? Summer? You sound so far away. Oh, you're right. Now is the time to plan for AC. Yes, I've heard it's going to get hot. With Barron's preseason cooling special, you can skip the line and save big. Like free AC or heat pump big. With a deal like this, there's no better time to upgrade your whole home comfort system. Yes, get free AC or a free heat pump with purchase of a high-efficiency furnace. You'll stay cool and enjoy energy savings for years to come. Barron's home performance experts look beyond the box, finding you affordable ways to improve the comfort, health, and energy efficiency of your home. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Yep, right now you can get free AC or a heat pump with purchase of a high-efficiency furnace. I'd call Barron today and be sure to ask about 60-month special financing. Pay no interest upon approval. Don't wait. Those hot nights are just around the corner, and this offer won't last. See you soon, summer.
Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I'm your host, Ashley Buttonshone, and on with me is Brandi Cruz. Welcome back, Brandi. So we're going to jump right in today, and I want to talk about the Let's Go Washington initiatives that most of you, or I would say most of you either had or I would hope had tried to sign the initiatives last year. There were six of them. And Brandi, why don't you tell our listeners, I'm going to let you give them the good news in case they're not paying attention to what's been going on, because, you know, everybody's going about their everyday life and they may not know what's been going on. But we have some great news about these initiatives, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of work obviously went into Brian Haywood, who funded most of them and got all of this off the ground and really made it possible for these initiatives to be in front of voters to sign. So obviously, you know, they got enough signatures and they were initiatives to the legislature. So what that means is they go to the legislature first for possible adoption, and then if they aren't adopted, they go to voters. And so all six of them qualified. I mean, they got more than 400,000 signatures each, which was amazing. And they went to the legislature, and Democrats were in kind of a weird position because they hate it. They hate these initiatives, absolutely hate it, because the initiatives seek to undermine some of their core policies. And so they were in a weird position, you know, because it's an election year. And do they just ignore six initiatives that had in total, you know, 800, they were represented through the signatures by 800,000 unique voters in Washington.
Right. And very bipartisan, right?
Very bipartisan. Yeah. To the best of their ability, Let's Go Washington tried to assess the political leanings of the people who signed them. And more people who were Democrat or independents signed them than even Republicans. So Democrats were in a weird position. And so they decided to adopt three of them. And the three that they adopted were, in their minds, the least consequential. And what I mean by that is they didn't undo a bunch of taxes. You know, Democrats don't want to let go of any of their money. So they decided to sign or vote the governor can't veto initiative. So he just didn't have a choice. He just has to accept them. The big one, I think, is police pursuits that they ended up adopting. So the initiative would scale back the terrible police pursuit restrictions that were put in place in 2021. So that takes effect in about 75 days after being passed by the legislature. That's going to be huge for public safety in our communities. The other one that they decided to adopt had to do with parental rights. So Democrats basically said, hey, this isn't going to do anything. We already respect parental rights, so let's just sign this thing anyway. And I just disagree with them. I mean, I think we've seen the erosion of parental rights when it comes to what parents deserve to know when it comes to what's happening with their kids at school, medical-wise, or otherwise. And so they adopted that initiative, Initiative 2081. And I do think it's going to be important for parents. It basically says that parents are the primary stakeholder in their kids' lives, and teachers aren't, or the government isn't. And so I think that initiative is really about moving forward when the legislature tries to erode parental rights. This law is on the books now that says, hey, wait a second, parents are the fundamental stakeholder in their kids' lives, so you can't do that. And then the other one that they adopted is no state income tax. Democrats had the same argument, oh, we don't need this. You know, our state constitution says no state income tax. But we already know that Democrats have been trying to test that, and they want to get a state income tax. They're on the record as saying they want a state income tax. And so what this does is solidify that constitutional promise into state statute to say no state income tax. So those three, they're going to be law in 75 days. Now, the bigger fight, as you know, ahead are the three that did not get passed by the legislature.
Absolutely. And, you know, so I have a theory here. I think that they passed three to try and save some of the money that they need for their candidates that will be running. Because if they have to fight all these initiatives that are going to be on the ballot, the money dries up pretty quick because people are going to want to protect their interests. And so I think they're a little strategic on what they were doing. They're like, okay, these are the least dangerous. But, you know, but the thing is, you know, the parental rights one, super important, because I know, and you've talked about this, within the education system and what they're putting in to the curriculum is straight up pornographic. And they'll admit it, but they won't admit it, right? So,
well, and I would argue that even there was a bill pushed this session that basically, and it passed, basically makes it harder for parents to object to certain curriculum in school. And a Republican state senator tried to pass an amendment that just said, okay, that's fine. You know, you can have this, you can have your inclusive curriculum, whatever it is, but just no pornography, nothing that's pornographic in nature. And Democrats killed that amendment. Why would you kill an amendment that simply said, cool, do what you want to do with the, you know, inclusive curriculum, but no pornographic content? And they refuse to consider it.
Right. And you know what kills me is that they're going to put it in the curriculum, but kids have to sign a they're agreeing that when they go on the internet that they're going to have good behavior and they're not going to look up things they shouldn't. They couldn't even look up the own curriculum that they're being given. Like,
yeah,
it blows my mind.
I know. And I'll give you an example just because I'm not a parent, but I want to be a parent. And I think some of this and watching the frustration of parents and hearing from so many parents, you know, day to day, you know, the an example of Democrats want to say, oh, well, you know, parents can review or object to curriculum anytime. You know, they can decide that their child isn't going to get a certain lesson if they want to. But here's the thing is, like, are parents given enough notice and are they given proper notice? I just want to give you one example. So over the winter break, there was a public school where, and I'm talking about a fourth grade class, where, you know, they're gone over the holiday break, over winter, and then 6 p.m. the night before they're supposed to come back to school. So 6 p.m., if you've got a fourth grader, like, you're having dinner, you're gearing up to send them back to school for the first time in like a month. You know, you're busy. Well, parents in this fourth grade class get an email saying, hey, FYI, one of the staff members who interacts with your kids has changed their gender. You know, they're now from, they go, before break, they were Miss Angela, and after break, they're Mr. Angel. And so we're going to be giving this gender lesson tomorrow morning to your fourth graders using this book, and they link to the book, which is this crazy book that says doctors just guess what gender you are when you're born. And so now these parents of fourth graders had like just hours to try to figure out, how do I explain to my children this subject or opt them out and take them out of class the first day back? It's just wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and some people don't have, they have no issue with it. That's your choice, right? It's your choice to be able to choose whether this is something you'd like your child to be involved with or not. A lot of parents don't want the over-sexualization of curriculum or their children, because they're kids, right? That fourth grade is like 9 years old. And kids are already curious enough without us bringing up even more of it in their face. So anyways, we can get back to the initiatives. We've got these three now that are coming up that are going to be on the ballot. So one of them, the hidden gas tax. So let's talk about the gas tax here for a minute.
Yeah, and these are – so the three that they left, and I agree with you that there's strategy here, of course. It's a critical election year. I think part of it was, you know, they painted all these initiatives as all funded by some rich billionaire MAGA guy. And then they had to turn around and adopt three of them. That's very embarrassing for Democrats. They did not want to have to do that. But I think in adopting three of them, they legitimized all of them.
Right.
And so, and they're going to have to spend a lot of money, like you said, fighting against these three. And they're going to fight hard because they will repeal billions of dollars in new taxes that Democrats have passed over the last 2 years. Oh, my gosh, God forbid. You know, they have to get rid of this windfall in new taxation that they've received. So with the hidden gas tax, this repeals the Climate Commitment Act, which is Governor Inslee's, that is going to be his legacy, essentially, when he leaves office at the end of the year. And so he's fighting hard against it. But it also is something that has set up some Democratic lawmakers for cushy jobs in the climate sector after they leave. But one of the things that the CCA did is it established these climate carbon auctions. So polluters have to essentially buy these imaginary credits that give them permission to pollute, essentially. And so these
still crazy
auctions
to me.
Happen.
It's still crazy to me.
It's very strange. It gets crazy, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know how long we're on. So if I'm being too verbose, let me know.
You're good. We've got through the hour. So we'll take a couple breaks,
but
we're good. You go. You keep going.
Okay, great. Because I love context more than anything else. But
yes.
So basically, these polluters go and they buy these at auction. And so depending on how much the credits go for at auction, that has a direct tie to the cost of gas at the pump for people. And Inslee lied about this for, you know, 2 years now, saying, oh, this won't increase gas prices. The cap and trade program is literally meant to increase gas prices. That's
mm-hmm.
the point. In fact, when Inslee first pushed this in 2014, his own staff told the legislature, hey, we want to be honest about this. This is going to increase gas prices, probably by about 40 cents a gallon. And for some reason, fast forward, they're not interested in being transparent anymore. I mean, there's literally video of his own staff saying that it was going to increase gas prices in 2014. Yet he's still just, he's so emboldened by power that he just doesn't care. So anyway, these carbon auctions began about 1 year ago, so in January of 2023, and immediately gas prices went up 43 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And so people started to see the effects of this. And so what this initiative would do is it would repeal that cap and trade system. And so that would immediately give us a little more relief at the pump. I mean, obviously, Washington always has some of the highest gas prices in the country because we have a lot of taxes tied on to every gallon of gas that people buy.
Right.
But I give people a handy slogan for all of these initiatives we're going to discuss that are going to be on the ballot. Vote yes, pay less.
Absolutely.
That's all you need to know. You vote yes, you're going to pay less. Pay less at the pump, pay less in taxes. It's going to be great. So that's what people need to spread around to their friends.
Yes.
Voting on initiatives can be confusing. It's like, oh, if I like the policy, do I vote? If I don't like it, do I vote no? No, you vote yes, pay less.
Yep, vote yes on everything and pay less. I love it because it gets confusing, especially for those who will read the for, the against, try it, and then you're just upside down and sideways
right.
before you know what's going on. So, yeah, remember, vote yes, pay less. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I am. And the other thing that's difficult, and there will be tens of millions of dollars, by the way, spent on these three initiatives by Democrats and unions trying to keep them intact. Mm-hmm. And there will be a lot of gaslighting. There will be a lot of manipulation and confusion. You know, it's going to be sort of the art of confusion. So keeping it simple for people is really, really important, and just encouraging people to wade through the noise that they're getting and some of the lies that they're being fed. And especially on the CCA, I think that's the one that you're going to see the most fight against. But I think if you can explain it to people in a simple way, like, hey, you're going to pay less at the gas pump. And yeah. I would also say for people who care about the environment, like I care about the environment. I always think it's funny that like Seattleites are painted as the environmentalists. Have you walked down Third Avenue?
Right.
That doesn't look too like climate friendly to me. And then it's, you know, Republicans or conservatives who live in these like beautiful, pristine, you know, rural areas who enjoy the outdoors and hunting and fishing. They're the ones who hate the environment. They're like, okay, let's just reset. We all care about the environment. We all care about protecting this beautiful planet of ours. And the truth is that the money that's coming in through the CCA is going explicitly to some things that there's experts on a bipartisan basis agree will actually hurt the environment. Let me give you one example. So of this first round of money that came in 2023 to the government coffers, $70 million of it was used to shut down a 2,000-acre working forest that was owned by the state of Washington. So this working forest, it was providing supplies to build, you know, libraries and firehouses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they shut it down because, you know, some people are like, oh, we don't want to cut down trees or whatever it is. So that will turn that into an old growth forest, basically, 2,000 acres. And what that will mean is over time, it will actually hurt the ability of that forest to sequester carbon. So old growth forests actually sequester less carbon than working forests. Because in a working forest, you might chop down a tree, but you're going to plant a new one, right? And it's right. young and it's, you know, better at carbon sequestration. So even the Commissioner of Public Lands, Hillary Frenz, has said on the record in the last few months, like, what are you guys doing? I mean, that is a net negative for the environment, and we still need this lumber for these public projects. So now what? We're going to ship in lumber from overseas? And how much carbon emissions is that going to create, you know, barging this over 2,000 miles or whatever it is?
Right.
So a lot of it is performative.
Yeah, there's a lot of times there's just such a disconnect between our legislators and where things actually happen. And I, you know, I work in disaster recovery and I see that because, oh, well, there's all this money, go spend it. But there's so much red tape to get through. So much people don't understand, you know, just because you pass a law and it feels good, it doesn't mean you can actually do it.
Right. And I think the homelessness crisis is a good example of that. I've been super red-pilled in the last 3 years or so. You know, all the conspiracies I used to just absolutely deny when I was a member of the mainstream media. Now I'm like, oh, wait a second. Like the homeless industrial complex, I'm a firm believer in. And this is, you can mirror that exactly to what we're seeing with the climate spending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are spending more money to get people off the streets than we ever have before, billions of dollars. And where are we at? We have
right.
a worse homeless crisis than we've ever had before. So where is that money going? And you look at something like the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Well, it's going to bloated government salaries. You know, it's going to their cronies and their buddies, and it's not helping people on the streets. And that's not what we want. And if you really care about the homeless, you should demand that every dollar that's designated for homeless spending is actually helping people who are dying on our streets. And so that's the same thing with the climate crisis. You know, Governor Inslee wants to be known as the climate governor, but even King 5 News did an expose on the fact that he doesn't meet his climate goals. And then he kind of sweeps that under the rug. You know, we have more carbon emissions than when he took office. We have less recycling than when he took office. When he first came into office, he set up this government website that he says was to hold him accountable on his climate goals. He's like, this is going to track our climate goals so the public knows exactly where we're at. Well, over time, as he started to miss these climate goals, and again, this is according to King 5, they started to remove those goals from that government watchdog website that he established to keep himself honest. And so it was like, hey, we didn't meet that goal, so let's just remove that goal so people don't track it and find out that we're not doing it.
Just move the marker. Yeah, it's like that's like the education system. Oh, the kids aren't meeting the testing standards. Let's just lower them.
Yeah, it's wild stuff. And so that's a big one. And for me, I'm most passionate about repealing it because of the lies. the lies really bother me. And yeah. Governor Inslee's refusal, just to be honest, you know, I don't know if he knows what it's like to stand at a gas pump and try to calculate how much you can afford to put in, you know, and have to put a gallon or two in. And 40 cents a gallon is a huge difference for working class people. And so it particularly bothers me when politicians lie about something that has to do with people's money, their budget, their ability to take care of their family. If the governor had just been honest about it and said, hey, you know, this is going to raise gas prices, but I believe it's the right thing to do for our environment, I would have disagreed with him, but I wouldn't have disagreed with him with the anger and outrage that I am right now. Mm-hmm. And so almost more than anything, it's the lies. And even for people who might agree with the policy, if it's a good policy, you shouldn't have to lie about it.
Absolutely.
And Senator Marco Elias, who represents areas of Snohomish County, he's a big CCA fan, and he is telling the most easily disprovable lies about what would happen if we repeal the CCA. It's like fear-mongering to the extreme. He says that, oh, we might not be able to do road maintenance and maintain bridges. And it's like not a dime of CCA money goes to regular road maintenance. What are you even talking about? That's just not true. The only CCA money that goes to transportation projects are brand new climate-related transportation projects. Because remember, this money just started coming into the coffers a year ago. Mm-hmm. So when they try to say that these initiatives will take the state back decades, how can you take the state back decades for money you just started getting for programs that just started?
Absolutely.
That makes no sense.
And you know, we're going to take a break, but absolutely, because the thing is, they haven't even gotten started. They're just finding the staff to take care of the money. So anyways, we'll be right back and we'll start talking about capital gains tax.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Stop by Dewey Griffin Subaru whenever your Subaru needs a quick service and a car wash. Check out Dewey's Express Service Center. It's fast, convenient, and best of all, there's no appointment necessary. Open 6 days a week, including Saturdays. Stop by for your next oil change or any other minor maintenance, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Dewey Griffin Subaru, community-minded and community-driven, and the only certified Subaru tire and service center in Whatcom County.
Dedicated to service, shining a light on local individuals, law enforcement, and groups giving back to our community. Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury in Bellingham.
Mackenzie Powell and family turned a negative into a positive when they discovered their new home had housed a seasonal colony of brown bats in the attic. After cleanup, they reached out to Bellingham Makerspace to create an alternate living space when the bats returned this spring. Enter local Girl Scout Amber Nearing, who took on the project of building 40 bat boxes. With a huge assist from Makerspace volunteers Sandy and Mark, the two families, the Bat Conservancy, local Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Bat Colony, and the Powell family will safely coexist this spring.
Dedicated to service. Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury. Go see why they were voted best jewelry store in the Northwest. You'll find a beautiful selection of GIA certified and lab-grown diamonds, plus unique custom designs with an in-house jeweler. Find them at 21 Bellwether Way, Suite 107, next to Lombardi's back patio.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Russian President Putin is vowing to punish those behind that concert massacre that has left at least 115 people dead. He's blaming Ukraine, which denies any involvement, even though ISIS has claimed responsibility. The BBC's Merlin Thomas is looking at video from the scene.
Witnesses said the shooting started inside the lobby. You can hear loud gunfire ringing out and see people crawling away on the floor.
Overnight, the Senate passed a $1.2 trillion spending package, averting worries over the partial government shutdown. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says it wasn't easy, but it is good for the nation. Some parts of the U.S. are going to need gloves and shovels or umbrellas this weekend.
Interior northeast locations, upstate New York, much of interior New England expected to see widespread heavy snowfall.
That's Zach Taylor at the National Weather Service in Maryland. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I'm your host, Ashley Buttonshone, and on with me this morning is Brandi Cruz. She's the host of Undivided. So we've been chatting about the initiatives, and we're talking about the hidden gas tax, the carbon tax. So now we can jump in and talk about capital gains. So a lot of times I hear from people who are, especially people I'd say anywhere from 20 to 35, it's, you know, this is good because this is going to make sure that the wealthy get taxed the way they should. So, Brandi, is that true?
Oh, gosh. Where do I start with this one? So, first of all, I am certainly not wealthy enough to have a capital gains tax under the way it's written now. And this is the hardest sell, I think, for working class people to be like, okay, why should I care about that? Mm-hmm. There's a couple reasons. First of all, it's illegal. You know, and that, I go back to, like, at its core, the fundamental problem with it is it's against our state constitution, and they were able to push it through anyway. And what I mean by that is, of course, we're not allowed to have an income tax that's graduated. So basically, if we were to have an income tax, it would have to be flat. It couldn't, you know, target more people at a higher percentage or whatever it is. So every other state in the U.S. and the IRS says that taxing capital gains is taxing income. But for some reason in Washington state, we were able to convince the state Supreme Court, Democrats were, that this was actually an excise tax.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason in Washington, now capital gains is an excise tax, and every other state and IRS considers it to be an income tax. So fundamentally, if not for any other reason, people should reject it for that reason. It was an end route around the Constitution of a state of Washington, which solidifies our rights, and we shouldn't be okay with things that go against the state Constitution, because what else are they going to play fast and loose with?
Absolutely.
But the other thing is, we've already seen efforts from Democrats in Olympia to lower the threshold for who a capital gains tax applies to. So I don't know if I'm going to be... I'm going to fumble on the exact numbers, but I think it's like you get taxed if you have profits over $250,000 on the sale of stocks and bonds and certain other assets.
Yep, that's right.
So, but the thing is they've been trying to drop that already. And so if you have voters who don't repeal it now, I promise you Democrats are going to be emboldened to continue to lower it. And I think it'll get lowered to the point where anytime you sell your house, you're subject to the capital gains tax. I think that that's what they want. I really think the broader mission here is for them to pass so many crazy taxes that Washingtonians just give up and agree to an income tax.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what ultimately they want. It's like, let's just make taxes so burdensome and terrible that people are like, okay, just give me an income tax. I give up. So that's really the argument I would make for people to repeal the capital gains tax. It might apply to the wealthy right now, but I promise you, based on their own actions and their own words, that it will be reduced and reduced and reduced to the point where anytime you sell your home, which in our housing market, a lot of people, first of all, your home is your biggest asset.
Right.
And a lot of people who bought at the right time in our state have seen their home value double or even triple, certainly are going to make out better than $250,000 in profit. I promise you, it'll only be a matter of time before the sale of your primary home is included in the capital gains tax.
Right. I agree with you. And it's scary because, you need all that money if you're going to buy another house in Washington.
Because also for some people, that's their nest egg, you know, for retirement. It's like, hey, you know, I did, for people who did well on their home, I mean, my husband is one of them. He bought at the right time. And I'm like, good job, babe. Whenever we retire, we're going to sell this sucker and we're going to move to somewhere sunny. And it's like, now imagine the government taxing that at a high rate. That's really annoying. And also, it just, generally, the idea of a capital gains tax, it discourages entrepreneurship and it discourages people from coming here and building businesses. You know, Jeff Bezos famously decided to abscond to Florida, where he's going to sell a ton of Amazon stock this year. And I think in doing that, he avoided paying about $300 million in capital gains tax. So the really rich people, they're going to find a way not to pay it. And so really, it's just going to end up like every other tax, hurting working class people the most. So we just have to repeal it now before they fiddle with it down the road.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that people, they just need to be careful, because every time we have another tax, like you said, they're going to inch it further and further and further. But, you know, OK, so let's move in to the long-term care act or coverage. This one gets me because it's like you pay into it. It's really not going to help you. And if you leave, it's gone.
Yeah, this is the craziest. So SEIU and home health care workers, they're going to dump millions of dollars into trying to keep the long-term care program intact. Why? Because it helps them, right? Financially. So they're going to throw everything at this one. But here's the deal. It is just bad policy. And there's even some Democrats who agree with that. You know, Senator Mark Mullett, a moderate Democrat who's running for governor, he has been a huge opponent of the long-term care tax. He's supporting the initiative to repeal it. And that's because it's just written so poorly, you know. So for people who aren't familiar, and this, if you have a regular paycheck, you are paying into the long-term care tax as of July of last year, unless you opted out of it. So you might remember that when this first came up, people had a very short window of time to go try to secure their own private long-term care insurance. And it was difficult because, well, first of all, some people were like, I don't want long-term care. So now they were caught between, okay, now I've got to either adopt a private policy that I don't want anyway, or for the rest of my working life, I have to pay the government for a long-term care fund that I might never use.
Right.
So that wasn't a very good choice for people. And then all these people who offered private plans, they stopped offering them in Washington because they knew that people would get the plan just to be able to opt out of the state plan, and then they would cancel it as soon as they were able to. And that's not good for those private companies. So there's a lot of Washingtonians who weren't able to opt out who are now stuck every paycheck paying into this long-term care program. And what it'll do is down the road, if you pay into it for enough time and you're invested in it, it'll give you about $30,000 in a payout down the road to go toward long-term care. Well, anybody who's ever needed or had a family member who's needed long-term care when they're older knows that that'll last you about 3 months. That'll last you about 3 months in help, and it's spread out over a period of time. But that's just a drop in the bucket. And then, not to mention that if you decide to leave the state of Washington, let's say you work here for 20 years, you pay into it for 20 years. You decide to leave the state of Washington, well, you're not going to get a dime. You're not going to get a dime of the benefit. There were also initial problems up front. They fixed a couple of the problems now. But for instance, people who worked in Washington but lived in Oregon or Idaho, well, they were going to pay into it because they're getting paid by a company in Washington, but they were out of state. They were never going to benefit from it.
Right.
So some of those things have been fixed, but just basic stuff that made this law terrible. And we don't even know if it's solvent. We don't even know if the long-term care program is going to be solvent. So basically what this initiative would do is it wouldn't repeal it, but it would make it optional.
Mm-hmm.
So Washingtonians could say, yes, I'd like to pay into this benefit so I can get it later in life, or no, I don't want it later in life, so I don't want to pay into it now, which seems reasonable. Otherwise,
right.
it's just socialization.
So do you know what happens to when people move and they leave the money behind? What happens to that money? Do you know?
Well, it just goes. It's in a fund, right?
Right.
So it's in a long-term care fund. I mean, there are a lot of people who will pay into it their whole life, and then they'll never use it. You know, they'll never need it, and so they just don't get it. And so it just goes into a general fund. That's why I say it's socialization, because for people who their money is coming out of their paycheck, it's not like it goes into an account for them, mm-hmm. you know, that's specific to them, and they're going to get a refund if they don't use it. No, it's just going to go into the account, and it's going to go to someone else.
So, because I just wonder, you know, if they don't have enough money eventually, then they're going to have a tax add to it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just wondering, are they banking on the fact that enough people are going to leave that they're going to have enough money to cover what they say they're going to cover? It seems very messy to me, and I would absolutely opt out if I had an option too. So,
and I'll just say quickly, is this actually hurts the poor the most? Because if you're wealthy, chances are you won't need like the government to fund your long-term care, right?
Right.
Or you have a private plan. If you're lower class, you know, you're going to rely on, you have the social safety net of the government already to help you with that later in life. Mm-hmm. And so really what this is mandating is that poor people pay into a fund that only the middle class is going to use,
right.
Which is kind of crazy when you think about it. So anyway, this initiative will make it optional. And as soon as it's made optional, so many Washingtonians will say, I don't want it, that it will fold. And that's what SEIU knows, is that the program will be insolvent the second it's made optional.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we have run through all the initiatives here and given you quite a bit of information. So just remember, if you vote yes, you get to pay less, right?
Love it.
So vote yes, pay less.
Pay less.
Yeah. So, all right. I want to talk a little bit now about the governor's race. And we're going to take a break in 1 minute, but let's just for a second. The governor's race. So Bob Ferguson, in my opinion, is very much of the same, but probably worse. He is not at all an advocate for public safety, even though he's wanting to walk it back. I don't know. Have you found any actual evidence, Brandy, that he is an advocate for public safety yet?
No, besides the words that are coming out of his mouth right now. No, everything he's done the last 12 years has shown that he is not indeed an advocate for public safety. But like a lot of candidates in a campaign year, they try to act like moderates and try to rewrite history and act like they cared about all these important issues all along.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. All right. We're going to take our break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the governor's race.
We're usually working against nature when we cool or heat our homes, but there's also a way to harness the power of nature to make your world more comfortable and affordable. Hi, I'm Joe Tien for my friends at West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric, and they're also one of our area's leading solar installers. Free yourself from the high cost of electricity and unpredictable rate increases with your own home solar system. You not only get a long-term, renewable, and dependable source of power, you can also kiss most or possibly all of your power bills goodbye. Many solar installations are sales tax-free in Washington, plus you'll enjoy a 30% federal tax credit. And solar is good for the environment. The average system reduces annual household CO2 emissions by 16,000 pounds. I trust West Mechanical's pros to maintain my home's comfort systems, and they'll help you choose and install the system that's right for you and your budget, always with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Find out what solar and West Mechanical can do for you today at westmechanical.net.
You love what you find.
A sure sign of spring is the arrival of Wilson's Furniture yearly patio furniture shipments, along with the problem of where they're going to put everything. And that means big savings of up to 50% are starting to sprout at Wilson's Furniture. You'll find living room, dining, bedroom furniture all marked down and ready for delivery. Are you ready for the annual college basketball tournament craziness? Catch all the action in a comfy lane recliner, the best seat in the house, starting at $5.99. Looking for a better night's sleep? Find it at Wilson's with a top-quality queen-size mattress for only $6.99. If your patio furniture was blown into your neighbor's yard during that last windstorm, just leave it there and come check out the huge selection that you'll find only at Wilson's. And come enjoy some crazy early bird pricing. You'll love what you find at Wilson's during their early spring fever sale event going on now. Wilson's Furniture opens 7 days a week on Pacific Highway between Bellingham and Ferndale.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I am Ashley Buttonshone, your host, on with Brandy Cruz from Undivided this morning. And so we've been chatting about the initiatives, what's passed, what's going to be on your ballot, how you're going to vote yes to pay less. And now we're going to talk about the governor's race. So, Brandy, I'm not a fan of Bob Ferguson at all. I would like to see him vacate from any public office and not come back. So I between Dave Reichert and Semi Bird are the choices, I think, if you're a conservative. And even if you're not necessarily conservative, but just looking to vote more conservatively this year, for me, there's no choice. For me, it's Dave Reichert. Semi Bird doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the money. And if you don't have the money, then you're in trouble. So he also, there's a little bit more to it too. And I think that Dave has the tools in his tool belt to win. And I think Semi lacks that. But what do you think? What are your feelings between the two?
Yeah, well, it's important for your listeners to know I'm not a Republican. I don't consider myself a Republican, although, you know, I surround myself with a lot of good Republicans and I'm in favor of a lot of Republican ideas just because I'm not a party person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But you just look at what happened in Congress overnight, you know, with the funding stuff. And yesterday, it's like the two-party system, in my opinion, is a mess. And I think it ultimately leads to stuff that's not the best for people. So I have no loyalty to anyone. I don't want to offend any politician who thinks we're friends. I have no loyalty to them, you know?
Right.
My loyalty in 2024 is going to go to whoever can beat Bob Ferguson. I truly believe, and I say this completely absent hyperbole, I believe a Bob Ferguson governorship is the point of no return for Washington State.
Yeah, I agree.
I believe that it will spread some of the failed policies of Seattle to every community in the state. I think the proposition of it is incredibly dangerous. And so I am loyal to anyone who can stop that from happening. I love this state with all my heart. My husband and I plan to retire here, and we don't want to get to the point of no return. So in that sense, I think 2024 is the fight. And if we lose the fight, we'll never have a chance to fight like this again. So that's where I'm coming from. And I have endorsed Dave Reichert. Now, coming from a mainstream media background, I haven't endorsed a lot of candidates. You know, obviously, I didn't do that when I was at Fox 13, and I'm very selective in who I endorse because I'd like to be able to still be critical of them and all of that. And I'll be critical of Dave when he's governor, for sure, mm-hmm. if he's deserving of it. So I have no longstanding loyalty to Dave or anything. I have loyalty to him so much as in that I just think he can win. So, you know, and it's really tough, you know, because this whole thing with Republicans has, frankly, can I just speak honestly? It's been embarrassing.
Yeah.
The last few months with the Republican Party in Washington State, I think, speaks to why I'm not a member of the Republican Party. It's been really embarrassing to watch. You know, there's this division and infighting between, you know, the Semi Bird and Dave Reichert camp that has been just amateurish. And look, you know, I had nothing against Semi Bird. He came on our show and, my producer and I looked at each other when we left. We're like, wow, he's good.
Yeah.
You know, we knew very little about him. We're like, holy moly, that man can talk. That man, he's passionate and really gets you excited. And, you know, then a couple things came out about Semi that I was like, ooh, that doesn't compute with the person that was in the studio. And we can go through some of those if you want. He's got a lot of baggage that for me is just a non-starter. It just is. Democrats have a war chest on their side and they will use every dime of that and it'll take them all 1 week to make the campaign just non-existent in a general election situation.
So, yeah, I agree. You know, because the thing is here, and nothing against Semi. I mean, I've been at events where he spoke, and you're right, like, gives you the goosebumps. He's a great speaker. And he's everything that maybe people on the right think they want when they hear him, because he's kind of that rah-rah cheerleader. But at the end of the day, the Democrats have the war chest, and now they have enough to drive a dump truck through his campaign. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we can get into some of those things. I mean, so
sure.
It doesn't even matter if they're in the past, you know, I mean, with the court martial that he had they've come out with, you know, kind of an explanation of this and that and some of the things, but it does not matter because perception is reality and he needs to win the middle, the common sense voter, and they're going to look and see that they can't trust him to keep cool. That's what they're going to think.
Yeah, there's a couple things here. And I'm just looking at this plainly, right? I'm looking at this as someone who's covered politics in Washington State for 15 years, who knows how these things play out, who knows how the media covers them, how campaigns will use it, you know, in a campaign cycle. So Semi has a couple things that are concerning to me personally, right, and go against sort of my morals and my ethics, but also are easy to put out there in a mailer and say, okay, no independents and Democrats are voting for this guy. One of them is his court-martial. Look, his court-martial is old, and I probably wouldn't have cared about it, except he lied about it. So a couple years ago, he was asked about his court-martial, and he lied and said, no, that was my cousin who has the same name, who was court-martialed. And that's not true. So while he was a candidate for governor, he lied about being court-martialed. That, to me, is exclusionary. But then, you know, there's more stuff on top of that. There's some 911 calls where he, you know, was calling 911 to report trespassers on his property, and he was being very berating to the 911 dispatchers. And the personality that I heard on those 911 calls is not in line with the personality that he put forth and puts forth publicly.
Right.
He was talking about, oh, I live in a $2 million home. I drive an $80,000 car. Just stuff that I'm like, wow, that is not the person I've met. What is going on? And then it came out more recently, he had a felony gun charge. And, you know, he says all this stuff is a misunderstanding. And it's like, well, you can only have so many misunderstandings, and Democrats don't care if it was a misunderstanding.
Absolutely.
It'll take them all of 1 week to destroy your campaign, and they won't have to spend as much money defeating Semi Byrd as they will Dave Ryker. The other thing is, he has been running a campaign far longer than Dave Ryker, and he's still not breaking 10% in any of the polls. He's still single digit in all the polls, which shows that his name recognition and support just isn't there. And he's hasn't even raised $500,000, I don't think. I haven't looked at the latest filing.
No, I think he's at $300,000, I believe. Yeah.
Right, and that's concerning for a couple of reasons. You can't win a gubernatorial campaign. Bob Ferguson has like $5 million. So you can't, not only can you not win with that, but it also shows that, you know, his supporters believe there's this huge grassroots movement behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, there's not. Not if you've only raised $350,000, there's not. You should have more money than that in small donations if you truly have this huge grassroots movement. So, you know, it's similar to the Lauren Culp situation, where there was a small group of people very excited about him because he was the pure fighter of a candidate that they wanted. But what they weren't seeing, you know, the forest through the trees, it's like, this is not a guy who's going to appeal to voters in a blue state, in a state that hasn't elected a Republican governor in 40 years. So you have some semi-supporters who want to paint Dave Ryker as a rhino. Fine. I hate the word rhino. It's so ridiculous. You know what? Dave
so
Ryker
ridiculous.
Has never lost. He has never lost a campaign, and he's never lost a campaign and run all of them in King County. And so you have a Republican who's never lost, which is rare in Washington, and he has a proven track record of winning in essentially the only county that matters when it comes to statewide election. That's your golden goose.
Yep.
It's the idea that Republicans would be considering anyone else when they have a guy who Republicans have been begging to run for governor for like three cycles now, and now he's running,
yeah.
And now you've got a chunk of the party that's like, screw him, he's a rhino. I'm like, you guys, don't do this. It's crazy.
Right. And, you know, the two-party system, I'm seeing it also in the Republican Party. It's, you know, I think very often you get in that bubble when you're either Republican or Democrat and you don't really think about what the rest of the voting bloc thinks. And
mm-hmm.
I think you really see that with Semi. And we just looked it up. So he's at 400,000. We just looked up on the PDC, just to be accurate here. He's at 400,000. But I mean, and maybe Joanna, can you look up what Dave's at? But Dave, I've heard people say, well, Semi is a veteran. Semi is pro-law enforcement. I'm like, so is Dave. He's a veteran. He
right.
is as pro-law enforcement as they come. I mean, the man caught the Green River Killer and wants to keep him in jail, which is really
what?
Important.
Yeah.
Where Bob Ferguson wants to let him out. So I just,
yeah.
you know, there are differences between Semi and Dave, but the biggest difference is that, I mean, they stand for almost all the same things. They have the same things that they want to see happen for Washington. But the biggest difference is Semi cannot pull this off. And it's a reality. And it's nothing against him personally. But we need to be realistic on who can win in order to win.
Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, I'm all in on the Dave Ryker campaign. I mean, tomorrow morning Sunday morning, I'm going to be spending time. I told people in Ferndale, hey, I will personally come stake a Dave Ryker sign in your yard if you send me your address. Like, there's no idle hands on this one. It's all hands on deck. And so I think it's hard because you want to talk about the Semi Byrd situation with care because he has put a lot of work in. He's been campaigning for a long time. There are some people who are really passionate about that campaign. And they have their reasons for it. And I don't want to act like that's not okay. You should be able to be passionate about the candidate you want to be passionate about. But it's also like, okay, what's more important here? And if we're all rowing in the same direction and it's beat Bob, right? Mm-hmm. Hell, I'll vote for a moderate Democrat if I thought that was the person who would beat Bob. If it was Mark Mullett and I thought he has a chance to beat Bob, like, I'd be all in on Mark Mullett. Because it's like, what can we do that'll just stop the Bob train? And Dave Ricart is the only option. I don't know how else to articulate that other than the conversation that we've had right now.
Yeah.
I commend Semi Bird on being able to, you know, get out there as a political unknown, and, you know, make some connections and have people be passionate about his campaign. But gosh, it's really frustrating to watch even the national pollsters are saying for the first time in 40 years, we might have a chance of, you know, having a Republican governor, and to watch it be the Republicans who are potentially squandering that opportunity is soul-sucking. Can I say that?
Yeah, we don't want to look back at this and think that we did this to ourselves, that we lost because we spent too much time fighting or we did the wrong thing in the primary. So anyway, mm-hmm. we've got 1 minute left here. I just want to say, so Dave Ricart has $2 million that he's raised so far. He has loads of small donations. That is mm-hmm. a small grassroots movement happening right now. So I would encourage you to do your research on the governor's race if you haven't already. I know I went to a Republican meeting and they hadn't done the research, which is scary to me. But I also mm-hmm. want to encourage you to go check out Brandy. Like she said, you can go check her out on, I think you post on Facebook, right, Brandy? Or maybe it was on X, that if someone would like a Dave Ricart sign in their yard tomorrow morning, she's going to be in Ferndale. You can shoot her an email if you check out her post. And then also go check her out on undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Go listen. I've spent a couple days listening. I don't get a lot of time to listen to stuff unless I'm driving somewhere, but I have thoroughly enjoyed your podcast. And we didn't even make it through everything I want to talk about. So that means you have to come back and chat with me again.
So. I'm happy to do that. And I'm excited to be up there. And yeah, I will personally come hammer a yard sign into your yard. You just got to send me an email and look that up.
All right. Sounds good. Brandy, I will see you tonight. And maybe the sun will pop out. Talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Until next time, guys. Thanks for listening.